Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, and I'm joined by Nia Kwete, a policy researcher and analyst who specializes in monitoring how international affairs affect Africa and the participation of African immigrants in the United States public policy. Previously, he served as executive director of Africa Action in Washington, D.C., and he was the founder of the Democracy and Conflict Research Institute in Accra, Ghana, and the Soros-funded grant-making organization OSIWA. Welcome to Background Briefing, Nia Kwete.
It's such a pleasure to be with you, Ian. Thanks for the invitation.
And we last spoke some months back. This has been going on, what, for 5 months since November, this stalemate where the loser of an election refuses to leave and the winner has been holed up in a hotel. The entire African neighborhood and the United Nations and the world has been urging Gbagbo to leave. It was almost inevitable that it would end up this way because of this man's intransigence, I guess.
Absolutely. You know, it is very hard to figure out what President Gbagbo will do because all of the principles and all of the guidelines where you think that even, you know, strong-willed leaders, what they might do, I mean, for me, he breaks the mold because, you know, that he came to power under dubious circumstances in 2000. At the end of his term in 2005, because of the conflict and the fact that a big chunk of Cote d'Ivoire, the northern part, which is largely Muslim in terms of religion, felt discriminated against a lot. And the symbol of that was Dr. Ouattara, who was prevented over and over from running because his political opponents invented this term of Ivoirite, who is a pure Ivorian, and used that to exclude him. So all of that, these elections, which were supposed to have been held in 2005, let me repeat that, these elections should have been held in 2005. Because of the conflict and the civil war, the UN came in at the invitation of President Gbagbo and the so-called rebels, and they all agreed, and they have lots of different agreements, and they gave a central role to the United Nations to help do the elections. And the UN has done a lot of other things. By my calculation, they spend about $3 billion on Cote d'Ivoire. They've built roads, they've built schools, they've kept the conflict down, they separated the warring parties. But the key task they were giving was to make sure that the elections were clean and fair. And I have to tell you, I mean, I pride myself on being a student of democracy because I think that's what Africa needs. Now, I'm in a minority of one. Most people, Africans and non-Africans, who look at Africa and how it might make progress, think that you should create a middle class first and democracy will follow. I disagree strongly. I think democracy is the foundation and the means by which you make progress in other areas. So I have studied democracy in Africa very closely. Elections, which are the central portion of democracy, I've looked at those two. My point is that in Cote d'Ivoire, these elections were very meticulous. And as you pointed out, the whole world has come to the conclusion that Alassane Ouattara won, except for President Gbagbo and the people around him. And this has led to this very searing stalemate, which has devastated Cote d'Ivoire and has endangered West Africa, really. Human Rights Watch, for instance, has documented a situation where armed militias and people close to Mr. Gbagbo have been killing West Africans, because they say you are not Ivorian, they kill you. So anyway, to cut a long story short, the situation we have in Cote d'Ivoire is very dangerous. It has devastated the country, And it is simply because one person who became president under dubious circumstances, self for 5 years, got an additional 5 years, lost the election, and he does not want to leave.
And the other person who won the election is International Monetary Fund economist Alessandro Watera. And the person who lost the elections, who won't leave office and who is in fact forcing a battle in the very capital. And now, just as before we went to air, the French UN forces have used helicopter gunships on his weapons depots because on orders from the UN Secretary General, because Gbagbo was targeting the UN headquarters as well as the main hotel where the press are. But what's extraordinary, just to give you an idea of how intransigent Gbagbo is, he's a 65-year-old former history professor, and among the offers he turned down was one from Barack Obama, proposing that this offering up a history professorship at a Boston university in return for Gbagbo stepping down peacefully. So there you have some of the history. But at the moment, apparently he's going to he's holed up within the palace and in the main area in the middle of the town there, of the city. And he's basically keeping everybody indoors and forcing the other side to fight block by block, which will result in huge civilian casualties. So this is and of course, prior to this, there have been reports of both sides committing massacres of civilian populations. So start with the massacres on both sides.
That is true. You know, there have been allegations. I mean, until a week ago, last Monday, the 28th of March, was when the forces that used to be called Force Nouvelle, the rebels, they are now called the Republican Forces of Côte d'Ivoire, and they swear allegiance to the man who won the elections, Dr. Ouattara. They began moving because they lost patience because they saw that Mr. Gbagbo was playing games, and they made very fast advances. So a week ago today, they took the big important town in western Côte d'Ivoire, southwestern Côte d'Ivoire, called Douekoué. Now, initially, it looked like there was no fighting, but this weekend, when observers went in, Caritas, the Red Cross, and the UN itself, they found a lot of dead bodies. We've seen some of them on the international media TV programs. Now, there is a big dispute about the numbers. The UN has come out and said that they are as low as 200. Caritas, at the other end, has said that there are 1,000 people, and so far, the forensics say that these people were killed after the Republican forces took over. So people are saying that it must have been those responsible, those swearing allegiance to Dr. Ouattara. But they've pointed out that they've called for an international investigation. A high-level UN Assistant Secretary General flew in on Sunday to supervise. So that was occurred less than a week ago. But in the 4 or 5 months since the election stalemate, there have been about 500 people killed in Abidjan, mostly, and most of them were killed by Mr. Gbagbo's soldiers. They fired into markets where women were selling vegetables. Then there were women before that, like a week before that, there were an instance where women were marching peacefully, and it's been captured on tape. I mean, CNN has got one of the tapes where you can see the women marching with nothing but branches and leaves. They were machine gunned, and 7 of them were killed. There have been reports of abductions and things. So when we find out what happened in Douekoué in Southwest, it may well be that forces loyal to Dr. Ouattara has committed some atrocities, and he has said that whoever did it must be punished and it's being investigated. But what we do know for sure is that Mr. Gbagbo had used intimidation and xenophobia and in intimidating all the followers, a lot of people, the 500 who had been killed so far before the Duikui reports were mostly Watara supporters.
So, but he, apparently the Watara's forces have a group in them, a group of hunters called Dozos, is that right?
That is true. In fact, you know, that is very much a West African tradition. You have them in Liberia, you have them in Sierra Leone, you have them in Cote d'Ivoire, you know, because this is heavily rainforest and hunting is a thousands-old tradition. And because they are good at shooting bows and arrows and guns and hunting, they become local self-defense militias. And usually they can get into fights with other groups. Now, according to the Watara people, they have said that, look, they think the killings were mostly between different militias because one of the things that Gbagbo had done was had recruited mercenaries from across the border, his western border from Liberia. And so there are different militia groups, and that's the claim. But yes, the Dozos are traditional hunters who can switch from hunting game to be armed militia and fighting. Now, the Watara government claims that no, their forces have not made an alliance with the Dozos. So the case is still being investigated.
Again,
what we do know for sure, because we've seen, is that at the very least, hundreds of people were killed in Duikui, which is shocking, within less than a week, because for the last five months since the elections, you've had about 500 people killed in Abidjan, and that was shocking. And the number of people that have just been massacred in Duikui is just absolutely shocking. One more thing, Ian. For me, what is interesting is if you look at the geography, Duikui is just about the biggest town in interior to the Ivory Coast that's closest to Liberia. There've been a million people displaced. In fact, more than a million displaced from Abidjan alone. Most of them are internally displaced. But of those who have gone outside Liberia, outside Cote d'Ivoire, you have about 120,000. 90% of those are in just Liberia alone. And that tells you that the area close to Liberia has been full of tension and fighting and war, and therefore innocent civilians leave their homes and cross over into Liberia. My point is that it points to the fact that even before the Watara forces arrived in Duikui, there were tensions and fighting before they got there.
Well, the International Committee of the Red Cross say there were 800 people killed. And clearly, yeah, though, at this point, even as bad as both of these people may be, Gbagbo is playing the ugly colonialist card on state media. This has terrified the 12,000 French nationals. But prior to that, you mentioned earlier his Ivorité program, which basically divided the southern Christian region from and made them the true Ivorians and pitted that against the north, mostly Muslim. So that seems to have been his MO. He's been isolated. Now the UN is going after him and his money's been cut off. He's also suffered a tremendous amount of defections within his military. So do you think that his whole thing's going to fall apart before all these civilians trapped inside the capital get massacred?
I certainly hope so. That's my, that's my expectation as well. Because, you know, as you mentioned, just today, because he's been, for months, he's been harassing the UN forces, not just verbally, but actually burning UN vehicles, even shooting at UN peacekeepers. They felt they had enough, and they used air power. Just before we came on the air, some of the reports I'm getting, the UN troops, some of their spokesmen in Abidjan, claim that now Gbagbo is just holed up, his forces are holed up in two or three isolated areas in Abidjan. I certainly hope that is true, and therefore my hope is that this should be over within a week. But I'm no military expert, And I am talking from Washington. I'm just going by the news I get. So it may well be that my prediction will not come true, but I will be very surprised if it lasts longer than a week, because he's not even in control of all of Abidjan. The airport is in the hands of the first the UN and then the French. The Abidjan is a sprawling oceanside city with a lagoon meandering. So there are three key bridges. The bridges are now all out of the hands of Mr. Gbagbo. So he's been confined to pockets. And given that the UN and the French now are using their air power, I hope and expect that within a week, this fighting should come to an end. Now, one other interesting thing that happened over the weekend is that Philip Mangu, who is the chief of Gbagbo's army, we have heard stories that there was mistrust between him and the president. Then we heard that he had defected with his family and gone to the South African embassy. Now, the interesting and intriguing thing is that now we hear he's gone back to President Gbagbo, and so we are speculating. If he was running away, why did he go back? Some of my friends think that maybe he was sent to talk to the South African embassy. Now, if that's true, what were they talking about? One possibility, sure. We hope.
Well, the South Africans have basically had tacit support for Gbagbo, but I'm afraid we've run out of time here, yes. Nia Kwete. Let's stay in touch, and hopefully your prediction is right that this will all be over soon.
Thank you so much.
And again, I've been speaking with Nia Kwete, policy researcher and analyst who specializes in monitoring how international affairs affect Africa and the participation of African immigrants in U.S. public policy. Previously, he served as executive director of Africa Action in Washington, D.C., and he was the founder of the Democracy and Conflict Research Institute in Accra, Ghana, and the Soros-funded grant-making foundation, OSIWA. Let's take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with Deborah Fellows, who's just back from China.